Ah, now for a real treat. You remember our Counterpoint regular Simon Long. He used to do the banyan tree for The Economist, based in Singapore. He's now back in London, but still knows a lot more about Asia than many, many other people. And he's joining us now to talk about China. You know, and the banks here, that how the banks are too big to fail. People say that about China. Well, let's just see what China's problems are. And we'll look at a bit of the America-China trade relationship. Simon Long, welcome back to Counterpoint.
Good to be back, Amanda.
Terrific. Well, China's economy, you know how much Australians just spend their time listening to the media, reading the media, what's happening in China, because our trade is so intertwined with China's economy. What's going on?
Well, we're in a strange period, it seems to me. We're in a bit of a lull in the Chinese economy, in that everything politically is on hold in China ahead of the five-yearly party congress that's going to be held in October or November this year. So no big announcements are expected, no big reforms. The watchword in China is stability, as always. It's trying to keep things on an even keel. But while that is the case, there are growing worries in some other parts of the world, notably last week from Washington, from the IMF, about whether China's current economic course is sustainable. And that's because for 10 years now, ever since the global financial crisis, the way China has kept itself growing at this average of, over 7% a year in that period, and now about 6.5% to 7%, is by pouring credit into the economy. And that credit is becoming more and more inefficient in terms of growth. It needs more and more debt to produce any given percentage point of growth. And there are worries that sooner or later, a big reckoning will have to come.
Yes, well, the article that I looked at, as you know, I'm not an economist, but on that point about the debt, it said the larger amounts of money needed to generate the same growth. And then it gave some figures. And talking in trillions, 6.5 trillion to generate 5 trillion in 2008, but last year, 20 trillion to generate the same amount of GDP growth nominally. So from 6.5 to 20 trillion just to create 5 trillion in growth. I mean, that's a tremendous drop in efficiency of generating wealth, isn't it?
Exactly. And the result is that the total amount of debt in the Chinese economy, non-bank debt, that is now close to 300% of GDP. And this worries economists for two reasons. Firstly, that is a huge percentage. It's beyond most other countries in the world, and there are questions whether that is sustainable. But perhaps more pertinently, it has risen so fast. And nowhere else in the world has seen such a rapid increase in debt without some financial crisis at the end of it resulting. And of course, as always, people say, well, China is different. As you said at the beginning, China is too big to fail. And there are some very good reasons for thinking that China can survive without a disastrous crash. The most important, perhaps, being that it's got huge reserves of foreign exchange. It's a huge international net creditor, although domestically its firms and some households are mired in debt. So it does have the resources, and it has a banking system which is primarily still a state-owned one. So it can, in theory, use those foreign exchange reserves to bail out the banks. It's done it in the past. So the risk may not be so much of a sudden crisis of the sort that we saw in the West 10 years ago, where there are queues outside banks, people running to get their money out because they lose faith in the banking system. The risk may be more of a slowdown in economic growth, where everything gums up, the system no longer works, and a scenario more like what happened in Japan, say, at the end of the 1980s, than what happened in the West in 2007-2008.
Mm. Still not good. What about, talk about this concept of fiscal space. Non-economists like me say, yeah, well, what if something goes wrong? You know, what space have you got? If there were some sort of crisis, like a big interbank market crisis, a loss of confidence in wealth management products, that sort of stuff. Not well, a global financial crisis, but you know, something pretty big that they had to use their reserves for. And then when you've used your reserves, you're cactus.
Well, those reserves, remember, are massive. There's $3 trillion of them. So we're quite a long way from any sort of international crisis like that. But you're right. I mean, the danger is that the economy slows down. The danger for Australia is that economic growth slows. So it imports less, commodity prices fall worldwide because China is such an important determinant of what they are, and that the outlook for business gets worse. And I think everybody expects that to happen to some degree. The question is how serious that slowdown is, how drastic. And they've been done extraordinarily well in keeping growth up. And after all, the IMF in that same report casting doubt on the long-term future or the medium-term future actually raised its short-term forecast for growth in China this year. But it's the mechanism for doing that. It's the way that it's now increasingly reliant on lending on debt that may not be repaid. They have two mechanisms for dealing with that. One is to just keep on extending it, which is what they've been doing, so that more and more bad loans stay in the system and banks just pretend they're not there and keep on rolling them over and lending more money to keep them going. Or they can confront it, which they've so far been very reluctant to do. And I think the expectation is that when this period of stability above all else ahead of the party congress is over, that they will feel obliged to confront some of it, that you will see some businesses go under, you will see more restrictions on what they can do, and we're already seeing some limits on the overseas investment of some firms, not just state-owned firms, but even private firms that are being subject to stricter curbs in the banking system. So I think you are going to see China pulling in its horns a bit.
Do you know, Simon, on a slightly unrelated matter, talking about North Korea, I did see a vox pop done in the street recently on a media outlet in Australia, with people saying that they think the international media are more concerned about North Korea than the South Koreans are. And that just tweaked in my head that, yes, sometimes some media outlets get an issue, and of course nuclear threat's a fabulous one for them, whack it on the front page, keep getting people to click on it with clickbait because it's a frightening issue and that will get anyone to click. But maybe it's not as bad as all of us are reading in the normal day-to-day papers. And then I saw a comment in the article that I read from China's representative at the IMF, Jin Zhongsha. And he was pretty much saying, well, it's not as bad as you say. And I just wondered whether, in relation to China's economy and some other things about China, we take it out of perspective and blow it up and say that it's far worse than it is. Do you think he's right that it's not as bad as the media make out?
Or is he giving the official reply
to, you know, just calm everybody down?
Well, his point, I think, was that what the IMF was overlooking was that besides this build-up of debt, that China has been through an extraordinary structural transformation in its economy, which the whole world was calling for 10 years ago. Remember, 10 years ago, we said, look, China's growth is all built on massive investment and on massive exports. And this is building up intolerable imbalances in the global economy. And that's one of the big reasons why we've had a financial crisis in the West. And China has transformed itself extraordinarily. Its current account surplus has come down from sort of 10% of GDP to around 2%, an extraordinary turnaround in a very
short
space
of
time. It is rebalancing the economy away from this emphasis on investment to one based on consumption. So there is he does have a point, but that doesn't really answer the question of what the government is going to do about the debt. So, no, I don't think the media is hyping this beyond reason. It's reasonable when the IMF, sober international body, raises these concerns to report them, just as it's reasonable when the President of the United States and the leader of North Korea trade threats about nuclear war to report them. I mean, they neither of them may mean what they say, but that they say it is something people should know.
Simon, we've only got a couple of minutes, but can we just briefly get some insight into what the United States is now doing, the launch of this inquiry? How's that going to affect trade relations with China?
I think we're coming up to a very tricky period in trade with China. If you think back to the campaign, one of the big themes that Donald Trump harped on was how China was stealing American jobs and mm-hmm. how he was going to do something about that. And we've seen a series of initiatives which have basically gone nowhere. Do you remember that they launched special national security inquiries into whether Chinese steel production was wrecking the American steel industry, which was always a slightly difficult one because, in fact, America imports hardly any steel from China. Now it gets it all from elsewhere in the world. So the accusation was that, in fact, China was distorting the whole global market, but it obviously raised concerns about the countries that do export a lot of steel to America. So that one's got parked, similarly one with aluminium. So now we're starting a new one, digging out a mechanism called it's called 301, which used to be used a lot in the 80s, but basically went out of favor when the World Trade Organization was formed in 1995 because the WTO was supposed to take over these sorts of responsibilities and remove this bilateral element. But on this one, unlike on a lot of other trade issues, like on renegotiating the NAFTA, North American Free Trade Agreement with Mexico and Canada, Donald Trump enjoys quite a lot of support, not just from his own Republican Party, from opposition Democrats, and from business. People do feel that on issues of intellectual property, on technology transfer, that China is abusing its market power to force unfair conditions on American and other companies, and they want something done about it. So that's something good politically for Donald Trump. And last week he announced this investigation into whether the US should impose bilateral penalties. The problem is that it does take something of a sledgehammer to the whole global trading system. I mean, that since 1995, the WTO has been the venue for sorting out disputes, and the US is threatening to go it alone.
Simon, I think we're going to have to talk a bit more about this on another day. Thanks very much for joining us today to give us insight into what's happening with China's debt, and that we needn't get too excited about it, but keep an eye on it, and to what Donald Trump's trying to do to clean up intellectual property protection in the United States. We'll talk again. Thanks, Simon.
Always good to talk to you, Amanda. Thank you very much.
That was Simon Long from The Economist in London.